This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Just minutes ago on this Friday afternoon, the UNC Board of Governors elected Margaret Spellings to head the university system. Margaret Spellings served in the George W. Bush administration, first as a domestic policy advisor, then as U.S. Department of Education secretary. She will begin as president of the UNC system in March, replacing Tom Ross, who was forced to resign earlier this year. It is a unanimous vote of the Board of Governors, but it belies many, many fractious fights that took place over the process of electing Margaret Spellings. State legislators, faculty members, and other board members say the whole process lacked transparency. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us now. Welcome back, Ken.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's start with Margaret Spellings because she does have a career on the national stage, a political career primarily, but she also served as education secretary. Tell us about her.
I was going to say, not only, yes, it's true, she is on a political stage, but she does have education chops. Before she was President Bush's education secretary in Texas, she worked for the previous governor there, Republican governor there, on education policy. When she left the White House, she opened up an education think tank. So, and yes, she was the education secretary for President Bush's second term. So she does have those credentials. I suspect that the argument, the complaint, as you say, is more about the process and not about the nominee itself. It's not about ideology. Maybe either the legislature felt that they didn't have the power, any power, in deciding who the next UNC president would be. But I don't think it's about ideology.
No, but the legislature did pass a law requiring the board itself, or the steering committee, or I should say the qualifying committee, to present three candidates. That law is still on the governor's desk, so they didn't have to do that. The selection committee only presented one candidate, and that has been a source of dissent and controversy both in the legislature and on the board itself.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, if Governor McCrory, I mean, knew that would be a sticking point, he knew that the legislature was not happy about that, why not put together a list of three names, put Margaret Spellings, Frank Stachow, and Ken Rudin, and see who's most qualified? I mean, just put three names together and then let the board decide. But the fact that he ignored that law, which, as you say, has not been signed yet, he hasn't signed it yet, but I'm surprised they didn't even at least do the give the legislature the courtesy of having three names just so they have that demand satisfied.
On the national stage, the field of Democratic contenders for White House is shrinking. Jim Webb, Lincoln Chafee dropped out this week.
Wait, who?
Okay, but a guy we knew, Vice President Biden, who said that, he's not even going to enter the race. And that was a serious question for all of us, whether or not Joe Biden was going to enter the race. So tell us more about this week in Democratic presidential politics.
It was a serious question, but I never thought he would run. I think all the arguments against him running, the fact that he didn't have money, that he didn't have campaign apparatus, even though he's been vice president for 7 years. He didn't have nearly the money or the operation or the troops on the ground in Iowa and New Hampshire as Hillary Clinton did, and to a lesser extent Bernie Sanders did. But you could see that he really, really wanted it when he made his announcement at the Rose Garden. First of all, when you saw him coming out of the Rose Garden, you knew the answer would be no, because President Obama wouldn't accompany him if he was saying, yes, I'm running for president. Obama wouldn't do that. But he just ran out of time, and, it's the kind of thing where in the old days you could, Bobby Kennedy entered the race after the New Hampshire primary. That, of course, is a million years ago, and you can't run for the nomination that way any longer.
Yeah. Well, what about Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee? As you say, they really weren't, I don't think they were taken seriously by many political observers. What's in it for individuals like that who will make a run for, the primary?
Well, you can always make the case of it on the Republican side. You run for president, you lose, and you become a commentator on Fox TV. That's certainly not what Lincoln Chafee was doing. Lincoln Chafee, without making Lincoln Chafee jokes, he clearly resented the fact that there were high members of the Democratic Party, including Hillary Clinton, who voted to go to war in Iraq in 2002 and 2003. When Lincoln Chafee was a Republican senator, he was, as a matter of fact, the only Republican in the Senate who voted against it. And he just felt that that vote disqualified her. And we heard that in the debate. Now, of course, Hillary Clinton had a great retort in that debate on October 13th. She said, well, if you're questioning my judgment, well, President Obama didn't question my judgment when he picked me for Secretary of State. So I think she kind of neutralized that argument, at least with the debate. Jim Webb, for his part, he never seemed like he really was. You know, he was kind of an odd duck in the sense that he wasn't really. I mean, he was the Navy Secretary under Ronald Reagan. He had questionable remarks about the Confederate flag and affirmative action, which made you think, well, maybe he's really not a Democrat. But he opposed the war in Iraq from the very, very beginning, which makes you think, well, he's not really, really Republican. He didn't seem to have a party that he was most comfortable with or in. And now, of course, the rumors are that, you know, now that he's ended his bid for the Democratic nomination, he could still run as an independent. And, of course, we know what the success of independent candidates are, which is none. Think of Ross Perot and $60 million in 1992 and no electoral votes. But there are people, I'll mention Ralph Nader's name, who can get a small amount of votes in a certain state and be the difference of power in that state.
You wouldn't think, though, that Jim Webb would scare an independent run by Jim Webb would scare the Democrats as much as an independent Trump candidacy might scare the Republicans.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, first of all, one of the most important thing is Webb was raising no money running as a Democrat. So how much money is he going to raise and is an independent? And Trump, whatever he does, whether he's the Republican nominee or an independent, I think still scares Republicans either way. And, of course, you know, again, we've said this over and over again. We keep thinking he'll disappear or say something so incendiary that he'll be forced out of the race. And every time he says something incendiary, his numbers move up. So,
well, yeah,
right,
he might
Republicans who think he's going to be the nominee.
He might scare the Republican leadership, but he doesn't scare Republican voters who still support him as their
Absolutely
number one.
Right. Right. And these are not all Republican voters. I have a feeling a lot of these people are people who just don't vote. But, you know, the people who write the letters to the editor saying, I'm fed up. You know, the guy from the movie Network who said, I'm mad as hell and I won't take it anymore. Those seem to be the Trump voters. And even though his policies are non-ideological, he can sound like a Democrat as much as he can sound like a Republican. He's touching a chord and people saying, you know, don't stop. And right now he shows no sign of stopping.
I'm talking to political junkie Ken Rudin today on The State of Things. So Hillary Clinton's still in the race, as far as we know, and I'm guessing she's going to stay right through the primary and through the convention. What do you think?
She has had a phenomenal week. First of all, I mean, I thought she was very, very strong in the debate. I know I've gotten a lot of emails from people who said, well, Bernie Sanders really was the real winner. I thought she was very solid, unflappable, always smiling. You know, Bernie Sanders may have his supporters, and he does, and he may have legitimate arguments, and I think he does, but he's very solemn and almost angry. And, you know, not many people like to vote for people who are angry, although, in fairness, there are a lot of issues out there that will make people angry. But having said that, I thought Hillary Clinton had a very strong in the debate. And then she was probably as nervous about what Joe Biden would do. I mean, Joe Biden arguing himself as the true Obama legacy candidate. And when he didn't run, she's had a very, very good week. And those 11 hours yesterday, and I saw a great amount of it. I really did. And I was fascinated by it because she was, again, I mean, are all the questions answered? No. Are there still some things that we don't know? Yes. But the Republicans certainly didn't do any kind of job of denting that, whatever vulnerability she might have. And I think she came out stronger. And, you know, it was almost like a rigged thing from the beginning. Once Kevin McCarthy said this committee is really about damaging Hillary Clinton, he didn't say that in so many words. But it felt like that. And watching it for 11 hours, that's what it felt like it was. It was just, you know, I don't think we learned anything new. And if you ask Trey Gowdy, the South Carolina Republican who chaired the committee, he said, well, no, we didn't learn anything. So there's 11 million, there's 11 hours and $4.8 million. And then how do you account for it?
Well, and it is kind of shades of you know, Whitewater in a way. I mean, it does take you back to, you know, the fact that the Republicans didn't have a legitimate case in what would have been a real political scandal. And then they settled for the sex scandal. And it ended up costing them two House members, and President Clinton survived.
He did, although nobody wants to have an impeachment on his resume, even though the American people were opposed to that impeachment. But there are still questions, as I said. I mean, I haven't seen the latest number that show whether Hillary Clinton's trustworthiness or honesty is still under scrutiny. But there are still questions about, you know, the FBI is still investigating her email. And the Republicans still didn't get an answer why, you know, whether or not Chris Stevens, the ambassador in Libya, was asking for more security. But the way they asked it, the way she answered it, it seemed like all the air came out of the Republican balloon, and she seems stronger than ever.
I only have just a couple of seconds left, but a liberal advocacy group filed a claim against a conservative organization in this state, a nonprofit called Carolina Rising. What's that all about?
It's a group that ostensibly is nonpartisan, an educational group that has nothing to do, ostensibly nothing to do with Tom Tillis, who was the Republican nominee for the Senate last year. But as it turned out, the head of the PAC said, you know, when he was asked on election night, what do you think of the election results? He said, you know, all the money we spent was really worth it. So all that facade of separation between super PACs and candidates seemed to go out the window with this story.
All right, Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Sally Krawcheck talks about the role of gender in investing and women in business on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.